Welcome to Uncommon Purpose with your hosts, Mandy Cooley
and Stephanie Porter.
We believe our uncommon purpose is found at the intersection of our heads and our hearts.
In each episode, we'll share stories, resources, and expertise that will help us build meaningful connections and reflect the love of Christ.
Join us as we have an authentic conversation about the journey of living for the Lord while cultivating our uncommon purpose. Welcome, friends, to the next episode of Uncommon Purpose. My name is Mandy Cooley.
I'm Stephanie Porter.
And we are going to spend some time with you today talking about apologies.
Oh, this is going to be a good topic.
So full confession on the front end, I'm an Enneagram 2. And I think we've talked about this before here. Stephanie has navigated her way to accepting Enneagram 2 as her label. Currently, yes. Are you still there?
Most of the time. Yeah. Sometimes I still go, that eight, she's alive and well.
I know.
Yeah. She is alive and well, because that's part of it. That's part of it. So,
but isn't that the truth?
I have to say, I do identify very much with a two, especially when it comes to apologizing.
Okay. Start us off then. Tell me what that means to you. We don't have to make this about the Enneagram, but what is it that's in you that wrestles with apology?
Well, one, when I disappoint someone or let someone down, I mean, that's a killer, right? So I just want to make it right. I also do want to own my part though. I mean, like that's important to me, but that's also a lot of individual work and growth is like, I've learned the healthy relationship piece of when you make a mistake, you've just got to say, you got to own it and humble yourself and say you're sorry. I can say in my unhealthy days back in the day that I was shame-based or guilt-based, mm-hmm. and that would drive the more apology to get out of those feelings mm-hmm. than just like, oh, hey, I hurt you.
Yeah. It's sometimes hard for me to accept the places where I've caused harm, the things that are mine versus the feeling that I see displayed in the other person. You just said that shame led you to take responsibility to make those feelings go away. That's a little bit of a different apology than the self-reflection of, yeah. I did this thing.
Yeah.
And whether it causes you harm or not, if it's a mistake or if it's wrong, I owe an apology.
Right. And I have to get right with God. Right. I mean, because that's the most important thing. I mean, he says, if you've sinned against your brother, leave your gift at the altar, go make it right, and then come back. Right. We can't even worship him when we've hurt or offended our brother or sister. And yeah, that, you know, I've worked tremendously on that. But that shame feeling, I mean, that came from a family of origin, you know, just family of origin dynamics and feeling bad and feeling the worthlessness. But it is a very different apology, because when you really care about honoring God or honoring people, you don't care so much about the mistake you made anymore.
That's where it flips for me. I can remember a very specific season in my life when I stopped caring about how my behavior affected other people. I mean, that's probably not fair. I always care about how my behavior impacts other people. But when my primary motivation was, how did my behavior grieve the heart of the Lord? That changed a lot. That was probably my access point to humility. Mm-hmm. And that really didn't come until maybe 15 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, I was 30 something before I really understood what humility was. Mm-hmm. And I was in a really crummy season. I had made a series of poor choices after poor choices after poor choices. I kind of had to come to grips with the consequences of just a series of, well, I just slid down the slippery slope. Of people pleasing. And it led me into just a messy mess in my own life. And at the time I was seeing a counselor who shared a verse with me. I'm not a scripture memorizing person. This one has stuck with me every day of my life since then, which is out of Psalms when David says, the sacrifices of the Lord are a broken and contrite spirit.
Yep.
And that just like pinged my heart in a way that the Lord wants more than anything, not performance, not behavior, but just a heart postured towards humble relationship with him.
So beautiful. That
then all of a sudden I could start to take responsibility for all the things. But man, the sorries that come on the other side of that are hard.
Yeah. And that was really well said. You know, he doesn't want our offerings, right? He says, I mean, he does. He wants it when we have the right heart, right? But he says, whatever, give me these offerings. They smell bad. You know, like he wants the sweet aroma. And so I love that. You're right. When we have that humble heart, then we can do the real work and take responsibility. And, you know, I think when we're looking at apologies, there's different ways to apologize. There's unhealthy and there's healthy. One of the things I learned, and it's kind of funny because 17 years ago is when I was learning all of this myself, and our journeys are just so similar, our timelines, right? I was in my 30s and we had a counselor, and he said, a little boy and a little girl say, I'm sorry. Adults say, I apologize. And that changed it dead in my tracks. And I'm like, oh gosh, because I'm sorry is I'm in trouble and I want out of trouble. I apologize is of ownership. As a therapist, I'm still in counseling, right? I still believe in it, you know? Yes. And so because I'm a grower. And just a few weeks ago, my therapist said, you are not allowed to say, I'm sorry and apologize anymore. And I was like, for anything?
Oh,
like, wait.
At all?
At all? Right? This is what I was like, at all? And I was like, back up the truck. I'm going to need some, I'm going to need some clarification. And he was like, you are just falling over yourself, over being overly responsible in your relationships. And I was like, oh my gosh. So he challenged me and he was like, you can only apologize when you've been abusive. I'm like,
oh,
abusive. Well, I wouldn't identify as being an abuser. And he was like,
maybe that was his point.
Well, I was like, is that what you're saying? And no, he was saying the opposite. And he said, I want to teach you the difference of just saying, I'm sorry, or apologizing, to learning how to own your behavior in the same way that what you're trying to do, but out of shame to still, because I'm still working on getting all the way out of that shame. Because I mean, that's just, like I said, family of origin. So it's going to be a lifelong, you know, forever. Grind. Yeah. So that's my thought for you is like, how do you say, hey, I recognize I was abrasive today or whatever. Without going, you know, I'm so sorry. I was a break. Like, how do we change the language in the narrative?
You know, in my work, I've learned that I have to really name my offense. And to name my offense, it requires that I kind of slow down. I'm in a bit of a season of running faster than I might prefer, but what seems like sort of the demands of my life season, working full time, parenting full time. It just carrying in summertime on 4 acres is a lot of work.
A lot chicken, of mowing.
Yeah. My season is fast and I have to stop. Part of my stop, the discipline of my stopping and slowing is in part to take an inventory of how was I today? Who was I today? Some of that with my kids, that's probably where I see it most often as I stop and go back to my kiddos and say, oof, I was not gentle.
Yeah.
I was quick to judge you. I was quick to respond to you. I'm raising teenage boys. That is a sticky wicket. Teenage boys are a hard place to parent. It's like the line between I'm allowed to use sarcasm and I'm not allowed to use sarcasm is ever changing. And so sometimes I bite a little more than I wish I would. And I see it on their faces pretty quickly. But what I say I'm sorry for is really more the heart of what I brought into the relationship and less of, I'm sorry, I was snippy.
Yeah, that's so good. So you're even going straight to the character defect. your offense is going straight to the character defect and the even the fruit of the spirit that was missing.
Yeah. That's interesting. I hadn't thought about that. Yeah. I mean, that language, I don't know, probably 12, 13 years ago, I started doing words of the year.
Yeah.
And a lot of my words end up to be fruit of the spirit, gentleness, self-control, joy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Maybe that process of selecting a focus to allow the Lord to just kind of do some work in my heart over a set amount of time. Yeah. Maybe that does produce some language around fruit of the spirit. Yeah. I hadn't thought about that before.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for that.
Yeah, you bet. What do you think makes for a good apology? What do you think is a healthy apology?
So I can tell you what doesn't make for a good apology. Okay. Something that sounds like, I'm sorry you felt that way.
Oh, could you like repeat that? Because that is a stinger. I hate that statement.
But I'm telling you, there are times that it just slides out and I don't even realize it because I am sorry for causing discomfort in another person.
Right.
And so it comes out like, oh, I'm so sorry you're hurt. No, that is a terrible apology. I'm sorry I hurt your feelings. I'm sorry you're frustrated. No.
Right.
I have to be really disciplined in my language around apologies to say, instead, I recognize that I caused you pain. I apologize for fill in the blank, whatever that is. I wasn't gentle. I was snippy. Whatever the thing is. Yeah. So I think for me, what feels important when I apologize is that I acknowledge how my behavior impacted the other person.
Mm-hmm.
First, I appreciate being seen in my pain. And so that feels like something that I want to do when I'm apologizing, but then also just take the responsibility of the thing I did and just ask for forgiveness.
Yeah.
That's language that isn't, I just don't know that it's as common as I kind of think the Lord would ask it to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I think about the Lord's Prayer, forgive me as I forgive others. I mean, we're called in that modeled prayer to offer forgiveness and to seek forgiveness. At least with my family, that's something I try really hard to do. There are some non-believers that don't know how to receive that. So try to kind of feel that out situationally. I do think that asking to be forgiven, it's also a really leveling conversation piece, like to ask someone to, when I have done that, I've watched the other person pretty quickly acknowledge, of course, I'm going to forgive you. Because when someone has asked me, I'm instantly taken to the place of realizing I can't hold unforgiveness because that's really only going to hurt me. That's not going to hurt them.
Right. Right. Well, I like your, and I'm going to use this word formula, you know, not that an apology has a formula to it, but I do think it has like some guidelines for us, like to help. Like I've got to first recognize what my behavior was, what my hurtful behavior was, and recognize what my offense was. And then, you know, then own that and then acknowledge their pain and then, you know, and then ask for forgiveness. So I like the structure of that, of your apology. I think that is very healthy and very biblical and also very relational.
What about you? What does an apology look like, sound like, feel like for you?
Well, I don't know if you're familiar with the five love languages, but there is actually the five love languages of apology also.
Oh, I don't know that one.
Yes. And you can go to their website. This is not an ad, but you know, you can go to fivelovelanguages.com and it'll say like, take the test. And there is a test of your love language of apology also.
Oh.
And it's very insightful. And that,
we'll link that in our show notes.
And that is a great tool. One, because then you know. Now, he used to have a book called The Five Love Languages of Apology, Dr. Chapman, but I think he retitled it. And so you can look it up. you know, we can look it up. But anyways, in there, that helped me understand like, oh, what is important to me about an apology? Just saying, I'm sorry, like just those two words, that's not enough for me. And it's not that I want restitution. It's that I definitely want ownership. So a healthy apology for me, given and received by, you know, like someone is offering their apology to me, I definitely need them to own what they've done. I need to own what I've done, because I think that's really important. Because I agree with you, when you recognize you caused someone pain, that's like, you know, balm on their heart. Like it's just, it says like, hey, I screwed up. I want you to know, I know it. I want to help heal it, you know, and I might not always have responsibility in healing it, but owning it in an apology is one of the things I can do to help heal the pain I caused someone. Definitely owning my pain, and then committing to working on whatever I did, whatever character defect that I had. And, you know, that's a hard word, but I've worked the 12 steps. And so one of the steps we do in the 12 steps is you work on listing out what your character defects are. And then the next step, that's step 6, and step 7, you ask the Lord to remove it. One of the things I did was I did a put on and put off there from like Ephesians 4. Is a good example of put on and put off of, you know, the character we don't want and the character we do want, which is of course God's character. When I recognize, oh, I was harsh and I want to put off harsh, but I want to put on gentleness. So I try to commit to the thing that I need to work on with whoever I'm talking to. So, you know, my apology might be like, hey, Mandy, I recognize I was really harsh in our conversation the other day, and I wasn't in a space to be talking about something, and I should have just shut my mouth, and I didn't. And I owe you an apology, and I recognize that, but I was really harsh and I want to be more gentle. And so I'm going to commit to being gentle in my tone when we talk. So would you please forgive me? That is what I would say for me is really important in an apology. Yeah.
For all of you listening, Stephanie, when you talk about 12 steps, that applies, you and I both know that applies outside of just what is commonly known as, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous. That's kind of the famous 12-step program. But just a little side note, do you want to kind of capture maybe what 12 steps, when you say a 12-step program, what in general that encapsulates for those who maybe only know that as a response to alcoholism or don't have any real familiarity with it at all?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I believe in the 12-step program. I wasn't the addict. Yep. And I did the 12 steps to heal from an addict's behavior. And the process from step 1 to step 12, honestly, is all biblically based and founded. And a true, and I'm going to use a kind of churchy word here, but a sanctification process. And really, in the simplest form, what that means is growth. It means you looked one way on step 1 and you looked like a caterpillar at step 1 and you were a butterfly at step 12, you know? And it's just this amazing process of really looking inside of yourself, what you believe, who you believe in, like as your higher power, and then taking a moral inventory of your life, and then recognizing all the people you've harmed, realizing that those harms are from character defects. What are your character defects? Asking the Lord to remove them and to replace them. Then making a list of the people you need to go back and apologize, and then officially making amends. Then doing in step 10, then you're doing a 30-day daily amends, like making sure your walk is clean with the Lord, because we're not necessarily walking through that process, just apologizing for the sake, like we said in the beginning, of the other person, but also for what your walk with God looks like. Yeah. And then step 11 was this beautiful daily seeking of God. You kind of journal. And then step 12 was like understanding the will of God and then giving away what you've learned. Mm-hmm. And so I love it. I think it's just this beautiful testimony of what change looks like and hard work and authentic change.
Yeah.
So I recommend it for my clients. I recommend the 12-step program, and not because they're an addict, and not sometimes because they're healing from someone else's addiction, but mm-hmm. sometimes looking at codependency. But also just honestly looking at our brokenness.
I think that's what is really beautiful. I had an opportunity, as you know, to author some curriculum that is based on a body of 12-step program or 12-step work for an author here in the Indy area, as he was converting that into curriculum for others to go through. And so I didn't go through it as a participant. I went through it as a curriculum writer, which was a really interesting way to encounter it, because I sat down here in this little space where I sit and record with you, and I read and I watched and I read and I watched, and the Lord did some things in me, and I feel like I got some sort of adjacent benefits to it as the Lord just continued to kind of work in my heart as I was encountering the content. There are a lot of resources that are available. So, you know, for those who may be listening, who are wrestling with any type of an addiction, whether that be, you know, substance abuse, pornography, shopping, gosh, we've all got coping mechanisms, right?
Absolutely.
And some of them come out in the form of overusing something in order to numb out. And others of us are overly and chronically overly responsible for those that are numbing out in other ways. However we choose to navigate this life, I would agree with you that there's just such wisdom in this very methodical process of taking an inventory of our lives and doing the work that the Lord invites us into, so that we can be in right relationship with Him and right relationship with those He's given us. Us in our space. Celebrate Recovery is kind of wherever anybody's listening. Celebrate Recovery is a great program.
Yeah.
Life Recovery is a great program. Those are not specific to a particular challenge. They're a little bit more generalized. So you can just kind of look up any challenge and it's 12-step program. And I think you'll probably find something.
Absolutely. And it really is a beautiful growth process. Yeah. And honestly, it really helped me learn how to apologize. When an apology is about you, right? It's about what you've done, and it is to honor the other person. It's not about getting out of trouble. The biggest way, to humility. It is the biggest path, I guess I would say. The most direct path to humility is when you can truly apologize and feel godly sorrow for hurting someone and hurting God. Mm-hmm. You know, I just want to make that right for all of us, not because I'm in shame and guilt, but because I truly love all of the parties involved.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay. So I'm going to shift just a little bit in our discussion of apology and bring up another that I think I hear a lot in women. The majority of our audience is and will continue to be primarily female, although our brothers listening, we are grateful for you.
Yeah, we welcome
you. Being a part of the family. One thing that I hear women do a lot, and I catch myself doing this. I'm in kind of a new role where I am leading in kind of a new way, and I'm leading some new people. And that is the way that we say sorry for things that we do that are inconveniences, or sorry for things that really there's nothing to be sorry for. I am simply asking for something, or I'm changing. This is where it comes up for me most often. Hey, I have to shift my plans a little bit. I'm so sorry for the inconvenience. I did not do anything wrong to change my plans.
Right.
So I don't owe an apology. I can feel something. It's like I'm borrowing it's like I'm anticipating the response of the other person and trying to make nice before they get upset by, oh, I'm so sorry if that's an inconvenience.
Uh-huh.
I've started using language instead. Thanks for your patience.
Yes. And, you know, honestly, I think that's kind of what my therapist was saying. Like, hey, no, we're not apologizing for things like that. Mm-hmm. Was that abusive? No. Mm-mm. Was that painful? No. Mm-mm. You know, we have to pivot in this perfect scenario that you're giving is like, oh, you needed a pivot. And what you need is a person who is flexible and understanding. Now, maybe they can't pivot. And that's okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're like, oh gosh, I so wish that I could do that today, but I can't. So we're going to have to reschedule. Okay, great. Let's reschedule. Not, oh, I'm so sorry. I can't do that. And please forgive me. And oh, And you're absolutely right. We women have been taught to beg for this, you know, forgiveness, so to speak, for just being normal human beings.
Right. I'm very aware of this recently as I find myself in conversations with more men professionally. And I'm just, and we just navigate, right? Like the world is messy and people are messy and ministry is messy. And so we bump up against each other. There's times that I just really don't, I'm not sorry, but it just comes out of my mouth. It comes out of my fingers as I'm texting. I catch myself. I won't apologize if I haven't committed an offense.
Exactly.
And so it also brings up for me just the value of having emotionally healthy, sort of unoffendable circles.
Uh-huh. That's what I was going to say. Yeah.
You know, you are someone in my world that I know if I inconvenience you, you will not choose offense. And I'm grateful for that.
Yeah.
And if I pick up offense, that's mine to hold. Mm-hmm. You're not responsible for the offense I'm holding.
Yeah.
So you also don't owe me an apology for that.
Right.
I think that's the other type of apology that I hear often, more conversational, more casual relationships, mm-hmm. that there's just sort of a flippant, oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I don't know that we need to be sorry for all the things that we think we say sorry for.
Well, and then it waters down when we have to have true apologies.
Right.
You know, I love that you brought that up because I do think that we do that. And it does come out so just naturally and easily. Mm-hmm. And I do think there was maybe a conditioning of our generation.
Oh,
like when we were growing up, we were just taught to apologize for breathing, you know, and now that's messaging. And over all the years, it's a lot of messaging. And now we're in these routines where we're like, oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. Like even, you know, like in the work for, you need to interrupt someone at their desk and ask them a question. And what's the first thing we say? I'm sorry to interrupt.
Uh-huh. If I was actually sorry to interrupt you, I wouldn't interrupt you.
Right. Because you didn't mean, you're not abusing them by interrupting. You're not offending them by interrupting. You didn't sin.
And I don't know if it's an interruption.
Right.
They could be sitting there just looking for an excuse to not do the thing that they were trying to work on. Right? It might not be an interruption. Why am I apologizing for something that maybe is not actually a problem?
Right. But it goes back to our self-esteem and our worthiness.
Yeah.
And so I think as we live uncommon purpose lives, right? Like we've got to live in just this God esteem.
Yeah, absolutely.
That, hey, you know, I am going to be an interruption and it's going to be okay. And if they can't talk to me, my job is to say, hey, I'm sorry. Pat, there, look at it came right up. Excuse me, I need to ask you a question. Is this a good time?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so it's like then giving them the responsibility, but I've only owned what I need to own. And that is I have a question and I need to ask it.
I find myself using that specific example. I find myself questioning, do I have to ask a question? Can I figure this out on my own? Uh-huh. Should I go somewhere else? I don't want to be a burden. Just this self-talk of if I have a question, I should ask it.
Right.
and again, not overthink the response or be embarrassed that I need to ask.
Right. Exactly.
I was sharing with you before we started recording that I am learning, I'm responsible for a new sort of administrative task at work. And it's one that I'm learning. I've not been in this position I'm in now, and I've not had this responsibility in the past. So I'm having to ask a lot of questions, and just the work in my own mind of realizing it's okay that I don't know something that I've never done before. They picked me to do this job. So of course I need to figure out how to do it so I can do it well and I can do it with excellence, but not feel like I'm burdening someone for asking a question about how to do the thing that I've been asked to do.
That's right.
Yeah. I think you are right that there has been some conditioning in our generation.
Mm-hmm.
I would be curious if we had an opportunity to talk to someone. You and I are both squarely positioned Gen Xers. Mm-hmm. If we had an opportunity to speak to a millennial Gen Z, would they feel that same conditioning? Or is it a female thing? I don't know. I don't know that I have an answer for that. It's just a consideration.
Yeah. That'd be a good Barna research project. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be good. Mm. But I think the gist of our topic today, though, is hold your head up high, look up, stand firm, know who you are, and that we're going to bump up against each other.
Yeah.
And just that we're going to need to own our offense when we offend someone, our sin. Mm-hmm. We need to own it. We need to name it. We need to ask for forgiveness. And then we need to commit to working on not doing it again. That doesn't mean you're never going to do it again. We're people.
No.
It means, though, I'm aware that I have something I need to work on, and I'm commit, and I'm confessing, and I'm committing to you that I'm going to do it.
That's a good wrap up, friend.
Yeah, I think that's good.
Yeah, this is a good topic. I think we'll have to continue to revisit even just the call to take ownership. Mm-hmm. I think that is always worthy of the time that we spend with each other, for each other, in our quiet time, just inviting the Lord to help us see in ourselves, inviting those we love and trust to help us see in ourselves what we can't always see alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Until next time.
Bye, friends.
We've loved having this conversation with you, and we're excited for the next one. Make sure to subscribe to Uncommon Purpose wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss an episode. Also, connect with us on social media. We'd love to hear your thoughts, stories, and experiences. Your journey is a part of this larger tapestry we're weaving together. Until next time.